This is your host, Kenneth Lesser, and excited to be with you. What fun. Sometimes there is different guests that have so much to offer that one visit is just not enough. And that happens to be the case with our guest today, Dr. Robert McDonald of the Telos Healing Center. Dr. McDonald has an extensive background in personal growth and development. We'll have him remind us again of a little of his background coming up. And then we got just marvelous information the last time around. Then we're going to have you make sure to make notes of what we call three golden questions. If you're ever going to any counseling of any sort, these are the questions that you'd want to make sure that counselor is asking you. And if you're not hearing that, then you may want to have him pay you to come in instead of you paying him to visit him or her, whatever the case may be. Anyway, that's just my little opinion here. What I want to do is bring back on our dear friend, Dr. McDonald. Dr. Robert, hello, hello.
Hello, Ken. How you doing?
Ah, better now that I'm talking with you.
Feels good. Glad to be here.
Thank you. As I go to look at your website at TELOSCENTER.com, it's just such a delight reading through some of the testimonials of people that you've helped. Can you help us with a quick review of some of your background and this work that you're doing with at the Telos Center and the Destination Method?
Sure. My background, we spoke about it last time, but just to bring those people up to date who weren't listening to that one, but maybe tuning in now for the first time, my background in the last 37, 38 years, I've been involved in helping people to make personal transformations, working in groups and individuals and also with families and couples for this time. And educationally, of course, I was trained with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in counseling and mental health, and then also a teaching credential in the state of California so that I could teach people from kindergarten through university. But mainly my work has not been in the school systems, been more helping people through institutes and through a private practice. And also have a doctorate of divinity from the Emerson Theological Institute. So my background is thorough in these kinds of educational structures, but more important than that was my own personal journey, which was to discover various ways to help people resolve their unnecessary human suffering. As we mentioned last time, there's a necessary human suffering, that which we can't change and hasn't delivered its gift, and then there's unnecessary human suffering, that's which we can change. We know what to do, and the suffering has delivered its gift, the gift generally being in the world compassion. So people learn through suffering about the nature of being human and about having a compassionate, loving heart. So there are gifts for all suffering, and then if we know how to change the suffering, we know how to resolve it, then we can move in that direction. So I created the Destination Method, which is part of what we do at the Telos Healing Center, and the Destination Method is a result of the combination of or integration of the heart of compassion and the sort of technology or methodology. We integrate the two of them. We're not just insight-oriented, and we're not just methodologically oriented. It's not, what we're interested in is having people have deep insight, deep compassion, and then very effective step-by-step procedures to resolve suffering at the physical, sexual, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. And we address all of those levels in our trainings, which we present throughout the world. And much of our work is done in the United States, but a great deal of it is done nowadays. A lot of it's done in Europe. I have taught in China and Japan and South America and Australia, New Zealand, as well as in the United States and Canada and Mexico and throughout Europe and England, France, Germany, Finland, Scandinavia in general, all over the world. And now what we like to do is provide this kind of training and resolution of suffering to as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And as you were explaining, there are some things that we'll be discussing as to ways that, of course, people can take courses from you in different locations, and then also by emailing you, if I'm understanding, to email you at robert@telos.com.
Yes.
Or to call the 714-577-5717. They can request a list of some different programs that you've put together, which will give them an opportunity to get some in-depth support for different things by viewing the teaching methods that you've used to help in different situations.
Yes, they can come to the programs that we present in California, in Texas, and in Louisiana. And that's what we're doing this year. We're mainly in these states, and when we're in the United States. And they can also just buy online, or rather they can contact me through my email address, and I can send them things they might want to purchase, products like DVDs. We have seven different kinds of DVDs that help people resolve different forms of suffering. And then we have CDs as well. So there's a lot available, and we have a number of seminars that are coming up this year.
Oh, this is great. Now, as we were talking last time, there was a story unfolding of a woman that had lost the love of her life, her husband, and I guess it was about 15, 16 years ago.
15 years ago, yeah.
And she was still in deep, deep grief and had not really been involved in any kind of, I guess, much social activity since the death of her husband.
Well, she'd been involved in some social activity during the 16 years, but she hadn't allowed herself to be open, to be touched. The idea of losing another love was too great, because she kept in her mind the image and the sounds that were related to the loss of her first husband. She had not resolved that particular pain. It wasn't grief that she was experiencing. It was very important to make distinctions about the difference between grief and shock and trauma. And perhaps on this call we can't really do justice to the in-depth differences, but generally speaking, I could say that she was not grieving the loss of her husband. She had a shocking image in her mind. She kept seeing something in her mind that reminded her of his death, and by consequence of that, she was unable to allow herself to be open to another person, to moving on in her life. She was caught or trapped.
Mm.
This was something that she had decided she wanted to change. This is where I was lucky. I was very lucky because she told me what she wanted. This is the most important thing, as we mentioned about those three golden questions that you brought.
Oh, yes, please. Let's bring those in at this time.
Those three golden questions are, one, what do you want? And we can dress that up in a lot of ways. It might sound a little stark saying, what do you want? But it can be, you know, what would you like as a result of the work we do, something like that. But the person needs to know what they want. And then they also need to know the second question, how will you know when you have it? What is the evidence that will help you to notice that you actually have what you want so that once you have what you want, you stop searching because you get it, you know it. So one is, what do you want? The next one is, how will you know when you have what you want? And the third one is, what's stopping you from having what you want right now? So when I asked her, I asked this whole group of people what they wanted, and the brave ones raised their hand to say what they in fact wanted. We were in a group of people, many of whom did not know me, and so it takes a certain amount of courage to raise a hand and say, you know, I'm really interested in changing something. Well, she did. She explained that she had been married and that 16 years ago the love of her life had died, and this had made it impossible for her to emotionally open again. As a consequence of that, she said she had not had the kind of life she wanted to have, and now 16 years later she wanted to change that. So I said, well, fine. Now I know what you want, and how she would know that she had what she wanted, she would feel lighter, more open, more filled with happiness or joy, a joy-filled heart that she could move forward. She would know this by a feeling she had inside where she was not burdened by this painful event. And then what was stopping her from having this was most important. What was stopping her was an image that she had in her mind. She had this terrible feeling in her heart. And when I asked her what the feeling looked like, she told me that it looked like this cloud. And we worked with the cloud, the image, just the symbol of the entire event. Because symbols are different than images. Symbols contain images. And she had this symbol, which contained a multitude of images that were disturbing to her emotionally. And what we did is we transformed that symbol. We moved it away, we moved it to different locations, and we changed it. So it changed it actually into an image of herself, having already solved this problem. Well, we worked in front of the group for approximately maybe 12, 15 minutes, because I had to find out what was going on. So I asked her a few questions. It took about that long. And after that period of time, she began to laugh. As soon as we did the work, she started to laugh. And she laughed, and then she didn't stop laughing. So the whole group was laughing. Nobody knew why we were laughing, but she was so light and free because this dark cloud image no longer bothered her. This symbol that had basically prevented her from having this light and happy attitude about life, it had oppressed her. Well, now it was no longer oppressing her, and she felt really, really so good. She couldn't stop laughing for quite a while. I mean, literally, we must have laughed for a minute, you know. It was a long time to laugh.
Yeah.
In front of a lot of people. Well, we kept on laughing and slapping our knees and things. And then pretty soon I said, well, how are you doing? And she says, great. She says, I haven't felt this good in years and years. And it was completely resolved. So we were able to do that in front of a group in a very short time. I want to remind you, though, and the listeners, that we did not deal with grief. Grief is an entirely different experience, or entirely it's represented differently in the human mind. But we were working essentially with shocking images that she had that were gathered together into this traumatic, gathered together into this symbol. A symbol, if we think of it properly, contains images. And the images themselves are what were causing her a lot of upset. So we transformed all of that in a matter of minutes. She feels terrific. I'm very happy with that particular piece of work, and she left being very, very appreciative. Well, it was a wonderful thing, and we do this quite a lot. We sit with people, find out what it is that they want, find out how they're going to know when they have it, find out what's stopping them, and then transform that which is stopping them into something that helps them. And it's although that sounds simplistic, it really is that easy.
Wow. I mean, people sometimes have avoided turning for therapeutic support, given that some processes people may hear about that have been in therapy for 5 or 10 or 15 years, and maybe they're making a little progress, but they still haven't got stuff handled after a long time in therapeutic processes. It would be no wonder that many people would would avoid that.
Yes, it's true. In normal psychotherapy, there doesn't seem to be an emphasis on transforming the mind directly, but more of an emphasis on discovering more and more insight as to why the person is feeling the way they're feeling. So it's more of an insight-oriented endeavor, as opposed to what is it that the person is doing mentally that's creating the kind of emotional upset that they're having. In the destination method, we're very clear that our emotions are a result of the internal maps that we make, the pictures that we see in our mind's eye, the sounds that we make in our mind's ear. This is obvious to anybody who will spend a moment just noticing. For example, many people complain about having an internal critic. Have you ever, you know what I'm talking about? An internal critic, internal criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that little voice that may say some unkind things.
Yeah, so sometimes people will have a voice that says unkind things. It might be their own voice, or it might be the voice of someone that they knew long ago. And that voice just plays in the mind, and the person just feels bad whenever they hear the voice. And oftentimes people don't know that the voice is playing until they slow down enough to listen. And then that voice can really disturb a person's life. It's an internal critic. Some people say that they have a whole chorus of voices, you know, lots and lots of people in there, or voices in there that are causing them problems. Well, we're able to find out what those voices are and transform them rapidly. That means we're able to change the way that the person thinks, because emotions are a result of our thinking. That's how they come about. They don't come from the sky. It's what is it that I see in my mind's eye or hear in my mind's ear. Those two factors create my emotional life.
Ah, wow. So feelings just aren't a random thing that just happens for no apparent reason.
Yeah, they're not random. They actually are connected. The emotion is a result, a consequence of what I say to myself in my mind's ear or see in my mind's eye. And that means any kind of emotion, including traumatic memory, terrible traumatic memory, very, very painful memory. I was working in, I was in Denmark many years ago, about 20 years ago, I was in Denmark, and I was working with a woman she flew in from Latvia across the Baltic Sea. She heard that I was there, and she asked if I would work with her. Well, I didn't speak her language, and she didn't speak English, so we had somebody translating. And she came in, she sat down, and she was 21 years old, and when she was 17 years old, she had been gang raped in Latvia at a discotheque. And she had been carrying this horrific memory and this terrible pain for these years, about 4 years, and it was not only was she carrying this terrible memory of the gang rape, but also after she had been raped, she was knocked unconscious. She awakened and she went home. When she got home, she tried to get into the front door where she lived, and her father was there, and her father saw the way she looked and called her names and slammed the door in her face, so that she was harmed doubly. You know, multiple harms, not only the gang rape, but also the way her father treated her. And also when she went to the police, they mistreated her. And so she had a lot of these. She had this terrible time that happened to her. It was just terrible. And what we did is we said, well, do you want to resolve that particular time in your life, the time in your life? And she said, yes. She wanted to no longer be upset by all of that. And we worked together for about an hour and a half or so, at the most, maybe an hour, in front of the group. And she was able to be totally free of all of the emotions that were connected to the rape and the rest of the painful experiences. It's possible to do that if and only if we understand what the mind is, Les. I mean, it really is about that. Unless people know what the mind is, they won't know how to resolve unnecessary human suffering. It's really as simple as that.
Huh. And now, I'm just thinking, because there's a number of areas of different programs. Could we take a minute and go over? I'm looking at a list here. There's CDs and titles that are quite intriguing. Good Mother, Bad Mother, Father Yes, Father No.
Mm-hmm.
To list some of these so that we could get some insight into some of the processes, because I want to bring this in, especially if I'm understanding correctly, a person watching someone else go through this, that there's distinct possibilities that just from watching and thinking about it and relating to that to their own life, that they can use these CDs and DVDs to do a lot of healing work without ever coming in for an appointment.
Yes, definitely. That's true. The CDs are specifically designed for that. The four CDs that we offer are all about resolving internal conflict, deep internal conflict. And certain conflicts prevent us from having the kind of life that we want to have. For example, we have a process called the Father Yes, Father No process. And this is a conflict resolution or integration process that deals with a part of a person that says absolutely yes to the masculine function or to the father function, and on the other hand, says absolutely no to the very same function. When a person has an internal conflict about father, typically that shows up in areas of that have to do with money, finances, power, expression in the world, to take a stand in the world. When these kinds of things show up in a person's life, it's not uncommon that the source of the difficulty is that they have a conflict with their biological father or their adopted father, or perhaps something that they call the father. Mm. It's a father function or an archetypal father. So on the one hand, the person is saying, yes, I really want to say yes to father and to masculinity and to power, to strength, to money, to going forward in my life. But on the other hand, I feel really bad about that, and I don't want to go forward in that way. I don't want to, in fact, I say completely no to the father, to masculinity, and so on, thinking that the masculine function is bad. So there's this conflict. I feel good about the masculine function. I feel really bad about the masculine function. When this conflict is going on, the person is in a bind when it comes to wanting to express themselves powerfully in the world. So the resolution of this particular conflict is what this one CD that we have called the Father Yes, Father No process is all about. So a person could get this CD, not have to go to psychotherapy about this issue, but get the CD, play it, listen to it, do what it is that is being suggested on the CD, and have a powerful internal transformation right away. It's designed to do that, to help people integrate what has previously been separated and rejected. So to integrate into the personality or into the person so that they feel good about themselves generally. The problems that people have are largely that they don't like themselves. They want to get rid of some part of themselves, like wanting to get rid of the father function or wanting to get rid of the mother function. These internal representations need to be loved. Love is the answer. Love is the way that people get deeply changed. But that's easy to say. Everybody says things like love is the answer and all that, but what does the person actually do? This particular CD called the Father Yes, Father No process does exactly what it's designed to do, helps to resolve that particular internal conflict. So we're really happy with that particular CD. The other CDs we have address also specific issues that people have.
So this Father Yes, Father No, dealing with what you call the masculine or the assertive
yes.
things, and this is both for men and women, of course.
Yeah, both for men and women, and help to resolve the fear of personal power. People are oftentimes afraid of being powerful, being personally powerful, because they think the consequence of that might be isolation, aloneness, guilt, shame. They start confusing personal power with aggression. And instead of just being assertive and standing up for what they feel and want and think and moving forward.
So someone that might say, well, I'm just having trouble getting my needs met.
Yes, somebody might say that. In fact, they might be having trouble getting their needs met because they're not standing up for themselves, saying, this is what I feel, this is what I want, this is what I think. They think perhaps they may have a conviction inside that it's wrong to do that. They may be somehow fighting against the very thing that they need to do, which is to take a stand. So the Father Yes, Father No process is designed to help them resolve that particular issue.
Mm. Wow. That one would definitely be key. And these CDs, what's the investment in something like this?
Well, they're $30. They're really inexpensive.
Wow.
A person can get $30 each. There are four of them. If they want to pay $30 and buy one of them, that's fine. If they want to buy all four, they can get them for $100, which makes them $25 each. So they're inexpensive, particularly because of what they do, what they're able to provide, which is a deep transformation. Not only at this one about the father, yes, father, no, but all of them, the good mother, bad mother process, the self-parenting process, and the forgive the unforgivable process. When people really want to have forgiveness, when they really want to forgive what they have been unable to forgive, the forgiving the unforgivable process is crucial.
Yeah. Now, we hear from many different spiritual groups, different faiths, that forgive your enemy, forgive yourself, forgive anyone that's offended you.
Yes.
I mean, this is nice advice.
It is. It's a good idea. Forgive everybody.
Yeah, but sometimes implementing that can be a little challenging, and then on top of it, I've seen in some instances where people were given wonderful advice that they knew in their heart was true,
mm-hmm.
And yet because they weren't able to implement it, they felt worse.
Yeah.
Than they did before. They already felt bad, and then they got to feel even worse because then they were failing at doing something that they wanted to do.
Exactly. That's not uncommon. Most people hear the advice of, well, you need to forgive your past, for example, something you have in the past. And oftentimes people confuse that with condoning the behavior of the person that perhaps harmed them in the past. But it's really not. The purpose of forgiveness is not to make the other person feel better. The purpose of forgiveness is that the one who's doing the forgiving gets to have peace of mind. That's the value of it. Forgiveness is the royal road to peace of mind. And so when people need to forgive, when they're holding a grudge and their life is disturbed by this grudge, then the best thing to do is to find a way that actually works to help them forgive, because there is no way to get peace of mind without forgiveness. It just doesn't happen. We have to let go of the demand that the perceived source of the pain change in any way. That is the definition of forgiveness. It's my definition of forgiveness. I think it's a very good one. It's that we let go of the demand that the perceived source of the pain change in any way whatsoever. And that's essentially saying, in a very short, much shorter way, let go of the demand that the past change. Instead of keep trying to change the past, I no longer demand that the past be different than it was. When this happens, I have forgiven. I'm not caught in the grudge state where I keep trying to push the past to be something other than it was. I completely let go of that emotional demand, and I accept that what happened in the past had a positive function. That's the first part of forgiveness, acceptance, and then forgiveness comes after acceptance. There must be acceptance first, which is recognizing the positive function of the pain, and really feeling that there was a positive function to the pain. And then forgiveness is when we no longer demand that the past be different than it was. We've achieved forgiveness when we no longer demand that the past be different than it was. And that can be done. In fact, it's done commonly. People do forgive the world and themselves, their parents, and so on. But it's usually stumbled upon. Whereas with something like this CD, where we do the forgiving the unforgivable process, we deliberately, step by step, take the person through a process designed to integrate the parts of them that are, on the one hand, favoring forgiveness, and on the other hand, rejecting forgiveness. When that's done, the person opens wide up, and they feel much, much better about what's been disturbing them.
Okay, so, and address, I guess I could imagine someone saying, well, geez, if I'm so forgiving and understanding, am I going to turn into a doormat?
Yeah, really important question. Really important. People fear that that forgiveness means that they have no boundaries, that they have no borders, that they have no demand on the world, on demand on behavior, but that's not the case. When a person is not forgiving, they're thinking about the past in a certain way, and they keep holding on to, sort of like when a person holds a grudge, really intense grudge, that anger that they're feeling toward the other person, the pain, the upset that they're feeling toward the other person, they keep holding on to it, hoping that by holding on to it, they're going to feel better. And that's sort of like drinking poison, thinking that this other person's going to die.
Oh, no.
It doesn't work, you know. So it is important to forgive and remember. This allows for boundaries. Forgiving and forgetting means that I'll go right ahead and do the same thing I did before because I forgot the lesson. I forgot what's the truth about my life and about the reality of the world. But what the most important thing we can learn when we're forgiving is to forgive and remember. Really forgive. No longer demand that the past be different than it was, but also remember that this person's ability to act in that way remains. They can do that again. But that doesn't mean that I'm upset with them. I've forgiven them. But I don't forget that if I stick my hand in a bucket full of razor blades, I'll get cut. That's what happens. So what I do is I forgive and remember. And this is a very valuable thing to deeply understand.
Wow. Now, that's excellent. And because we've so often heard this, well, get over it, forgive and forget.
Yeah.
And now you're giving us some very powerful advice to say, wait a minute, if you have had problems forgiving and forgetting, there's some inner wisdom there that may be guiding you, because the goal isn't to forgive and forget, it's to forgive and remember so that you proceed to a better life.
Precisely. Yeah, there is inner guidance. And so the upset about forgiving and forgetting is that I don't want to forgive and forget if forgetting means that I cut it right out of my mind, I don't even know that anything happened. Of course, something happened, and it's just whether or not I'm upset about what happened. That's the key. Am I upset about what happened any longer, or have I removed the stinger? Where I can think about what happened, it does not upset me, and I do remember that that did upset me, and that it is possible for that to happen, so that I can have boundaries and borders and have put limitations on what I do and also on what other people do. So it's forgive and remember is vastly superior, much more wise than forgiving and forgetting. If we completely forget everything, then we're pretty much doomed to repeat the same problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't have a learning, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so if we've made the same mistake repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
Then you're suggesting from your experience that, one, there wasn't a complete forgiveness process or a deep learning of what was there in the experience, so that we could then choose differently in future interactions.
That's right, because pain has value. Pain has value. It teaches us something. Many people want to get rid of all the pain that they have. They say, I don't want to have any pain. But this is quite foolish, to have no capacity for pain. It reminds me of the story I often tell about the man who came into my office wanting to see me for help, and he brought in a portable stove, had his hand on the stove. The stove was burning his hand. And he said, hello? And I said, what do you want? Because, see, I'm like a taxi driver. Just because I saw that his hand was on the stove and the stove was burning his hand, I did not conclude that I knew what he wanted. I don't read minds at all. So I said to him, what do you want? And he said, well, I've come to see you because I want you to make my hand stop hurting. And, of course, my initial reaction was like just as anyone else's. And I said, well, that's simple enough. You didn't need to have to come 3,000 miles to see me. You can just remove your hand from the hot stove.
Yes.
Well, that's when he was upset with me. He said, I'm really upset with you. He said, you know, Dr. McDonald, I really thought you knew what you were doing. And what I notice is you're just telling me to do what everybody tells me to do. And I said, well, you want your hand to stop hurting, isn't that right? He said, yes, but you haven't really heard me. And I thought of him for a while, and then I said, oh, you're right. I haven't heard you. Now I understand. You want me to make your hand stop hurting. You want to keep your hand on the stove. Keep doing what you've always done. You just don't want it to hurt. And he said, that's right. And what I found out was that he wanted to keep doing the same behavior that caused him pain, leave his hand on the hot stove. And, of course, he wanted to do that without any pain. He wanted to just do that. So I explained to him, I said, you know, don't you understand that if you leave your hand there long enough, it's going to burn your hand up. You won't have the use of your hand. That means that pain has value. Pain has very much value. And he said, no, pain doesn't have any value at all. Said, yes, it does. That was the difficulty that he had. He couldn't understand how much value there is in pain. Pain has what we call hermeneutic value. Hermes was the god, the messenger god that took messages from the human beings to the gods and back again. And hermeneutic value means meaning value. So pain has the value of meaning. It tells us something. It has a message. And having a hot hand on the hot stove is telling us, remove your hand, change your behavior. Don't do the same thing you've always done. If you keep doing the same thing you've always done, it'll keep giving you pain. It's time to change. Well, this gentleman wasn't convinced. So I told him, can you imagine that there's somebody in the world who would pay money, an infinite, any amount of money, to feel pain? And of course he said no, and I had to remind him of the lepers that were living in Hawaii long, long ago. When people were hiding the lepers, the people who had leprosy, they put them down in Molokai, they put them down in caves near the water. And when they put them there to protect the rest of the society, they thought, from the people who had leprosy. And they really believed that leprosy was something that was able to make fingers fall off and toes fall off. Well, what they didn't know was that leprosy doesn't do that. What leprosy does is it kills the nerves in the extremities of the body. Kill the nerves in the fingertips and in the nose and in the tip of the nose and in the toes and earlobes and so on. It makes them unfeeling. There's no feeling there. Some of these people who were down in the caves by the water on Molokai, they would, this long time ago, they'd go to sleep in those caves. Well, the rats would come in at nighttime, the sea rats come in, and they would just chew those fingertips off, and the person didn't have the pain to pull their hand away and say, ouch. So their hands were destroyed. Because they didn't have pain. Those people would have paid any amount of money to have pain, because the pain has value. It tells us, it's like a lighthouse that tells a ship, don't go over here. If you go over here, you're going to hit the rocks. It helps to guide us to change our lives. There's great value in pain. Of course, it's possible to have too much pain, but that's the reason why we have all these tools to help people. Once a person learns the lesson of the pain, then it's a good idea to move forward in life. But if they just forget about it, if they forget about the pain, then they're likely to put their hand right back on that hot stove. So what we want to do is resolve the pain and have the person remember. They forgive and remember.
Mm. Wow. That's profound. Now, in this series, we've talked about a couple of them. There's two more that I'd like you to please comment on. There's the good mother, bad mother, and the self-parenting process.
Sure. The good mother, bad mother process is oftentimes people have an internal conflict specifically about their own mother, their biological mother or adopted mother. They, on the one hand, they're saying, absolutely, this is a good mother. My mother's good mother, and they feel really good about their mother. And on the other hand, they think this is a bad mother. They have a conflict about mother. What I did with this is I found out about this by reading some of Ken Wilber's work, where he was pointing out in some of his brilliant books that Freud was aware of this conflict in human beings, saying that human beings were, when babies, were unable to tell that the mother who was feeling good in one day, in a good mood one day, and then in a bad mood the next day, they couldn't tell that it was the same mother. And so it was like being able to notice that these are actually just the same mom in a different mood would be an integration of the good mother and the bad mother. So when I read about that, I thought, I can just create a process about that. And sat down and created this process and tried it out with myself and with many, many other people, and now it's been used all over the world. The good mother, bad mother process allows people to integrate those extremes that they hold within themselves and say, well, on the one hand, my mother's good and I love her, she's just fine, or the mother function, the archetypal mother, the femininity, the feminine is good. On the other hand, bad, you know, bad mother and so on. So what we do when we integrate these two, we find their positive function. All effective work comes from finding the positive function of anything that appears to be negative. So find the positive function of the good mother, the positive function of the bad mother, these different parts within the self, integrate the two, and lo and behold, the person evolved into a higher, more effective level of functioning. Typically, people who have this conflict going on and have not resolved it have a difficult time in their own personal lives. It's like feeling like they're unlovable. They personally are unlovable. And that they are extra sensitive to everybody else's feelings, so and to the way people are treating them. They're struggling with being overly critical of themselves and feeling as though other people are overly critical of them. And when we resolve this through the good mother, bad mother process, the person comes to a much deeper level of personal integration, inner peace. Very powerful. And it very much helps in the relationship with one's own mother, in fact, and not just a sort of fantasized mother, but many people struggle with their own mother, memories of their own mother, when mom was really happy on one day and then really angry on another, and they go, yeah, I never could quite figure out. It was kind of like she was saying, come here and go away all at the same time. When we get this conflict going on inside of the person, whether or not mom is actually alive or dead makes no difference. It's inside the person that matters. When we get this conflict going, there's the best way that I know to solve it is the good mother, bad mother process, which is one of the CDs that we offer.
Mm. And does that help if someone is having trouble taking care of themselves or nurturing those around them?
Yes, it helps about nurturing. It helps them to recognize what nurturing is and what it isn't. So oftentimes they're confused about nurturing. The feminine function, archetypically, is described as nurturing and encouraging and giving birth. The female function is to nurture, to encourage, and to give birth. This is anthropologists would talk to you about this. It's not necessarily politically correct, but this is the general idea. When a girl becomes a woman, when she's able to nurture, encourage, and give birth, and when there's a struggle at this level, it makes it difficult to give it and also to receive nurturing and encouraging. And then birthing oneself into the next level.
Mm. Wow. And because we've discussed here mother and father and forgiveness, and then I'm curious about this last in the series, this self-parenting process.
Yeah, self-parenting, of course, is a CD that we offer that is another integration process. It integrates both the father and the mother function. So on the one hand, everything that I think about as the mother part of me, all the different aspects of my mother that I hold within myself, and then all the different aspects of my father that I hold within myself, the different ways that I think about my father and my masculinity, and my mother and my femininity and all that. We think about all of that, then there's commonly a conflict in there about these two, that the mother and the father functions are in conflict, and they live within me. And as long as they're in conflict, it's difficult for me to feel the kind of self-love that I want to come into this authentic personal independence, to truly be independent. You know, here's the truth of how I am. Independence and honesty are one and the same thing. So as a person becomes increasingly honest, they're increasingly independent. And when there is this struggle within about the mother and the father part of me are fighting, it's difficult for me to settle down and tell the truth about what I feel and what I want and what I think. But by doing this self-parenting process, that gets integrated. The person has an integration, become more whole, more complete. They take a step in evolution.
Wow. Wow. And, you've been doing this for many years and seeing some profound changes. Is this something that the average person out there can actually just get these and listen to them and accomplish this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is not just theory for me. All of these I've used on myself first. I used to argue with my mother a lot, and when I developed the good mother, bad mother process, my ability to recognize what her limitations were and my limitations were just leapt. It was so much greater, and I was able to recognize what she could do and what she couldn't do without rancor, without upset, recognizing her humanity, that she was capable of a certain amount, but not everything. She was capable of only what she was capable of, and so my ability to relax and be comfortable with her limitations and also with my own were dramatically improved, and this was very important for me. And so my wife would tell you that if she were on the phone, she'd say, yeah, things changed a lot when Robert developed that good mother, bad mother process. These are things that anybody who is interested in personal change, anyone who's interested in personal change, they sit down, not in a car, by the way, these are not to be played in a car CD, but rather at home in private, comfortable, one relaxed. They can listen to these and do what it is that is where on the CDs. I take the person through the process, so they knew exactly what I asked them to do on the CD, and they will have profound results. There's no doubt about that.
Ah, okay. And it and there's in this, I'm guessing, but I want to confirm with you that a person going through these processes, they're not being asked to recall traumatic events.
No, they're not. That's really a good point. They're not asked to recall any traumatic events. They're actually just asked to notice the feelings in their bodies. They say, where in your body does the good mother live? Where in your body does the bad mother live? So they'll find these feelings in their bodies. They'll notice it, even though when we talk about it intellectually, as we're doing now, it sounds like, well, how would I ever know that? But once the person's relaxed, they will notice immediately the location, where in their body the good mother lives and the bad mother lives, and then they find how they can move those locations. And then they do the thing that is most important. They find the positive function, as I mentioned before, the positive intention, the positive function behind the behavior of the good mother and the bad mother is crucial for personal change. I would say the number one difficulty that people have in the world comes from not recognizing, from simply ignoring or rejecting or not recognizing, that everyone all the time has a positive intention behind what they're doing. Everybody's positively intended. Even if they end up doing terrible things, that's their behavior. The behavior can be bad. Behavior can be terrible. But people's intentions, ultimate intentions, are always good. And so within myself, I have the good mother and the bad mother within myself. The good mother is intending to produce something good in my life, to provide me with something good in my life. Oddly enough, this is also true of the bad mother that lives within me. So the good mother and the bad mother both intend to produce something good within me. These positive intentions are the basis of my ability to develop. Whenever we assume that there's negative intent within ourselves, we're lost in a struggle. We actually fight ourselves and wrestle ourselves to the ground. And we always lose. If I fight with myself, I always lose. If I look for positive intention, I always win. I always get better. I always develop. I always evolve. Evolution comes from an integration of opposites once the positive function of the opposites is acknowledged. If we don't acknowledge the positive function of the opposites, they will not integrate. So,
now I'm curious if there's a distinction between for a person to just make an assumption and say, okay, I don't know why for sure yet, but Dr. McDonald is encouraging me to make an assumption that behind this this behavior that had some negative consequences, that there was a positive intent.
Yeah.
And I'm going to acknowledge that. Now, that is it important to not just to acknowledge, but to discover what it was, or is it just sufficient to acknowledge, I don't know what it was for sure, but I'm going to assume for the moment that there was a positive intent.
That's a beginning. To assume that there is positive intent is a beginning, and it's also a great thing to assume all the time, to assume positive intent in everybody, in whatever they're doing, because it will help us to change the world. But it is deeply important to find out specifically what's the positive intention that this part of me has for myself. Everybody's positively intended, and every part of me is positively intended. And I'd like to find out, well, what was the positive intention?
And that we would, in listening to these CDs, we'd be guided to making some of those discoveries.
Oh, definitely.
Precisely. Okay.
That's what we do. I guide the people to step by step, slowly, gently, discover the positive intention. What was the good thing that was trying to be accomplished by the bad mother being so critical? What is the positive intention of criticism, for example? When people criticize their children, are they trying to harm their children, or are they trying to improve their children? There's some positive intention behind every behavior. That's a very difficult concept for most people because it's contrary to what we've been taught, specifically in psychology. Psychology oftentimes looks to find the negative. Remember the old books, the years ago, Games People Play? Remember those kinds of things?
Uh-huh.
Long ago, there were books about games people play and Man the Manipulator and all that. It was always looking for the negative. What is the negative intent that somebody has? Well, we can find negative intent. We can assume negative intent anytime we want. It's just that Finding negative intent does not help to resolve the behavior or change the behavior or evolve the person, but finding positive intent does. Finding positive intent is necessary for personal transformation. This is kind of a psychological way of saying finding that the person is innocent, good, that they are essentially love. At the basis of everybody is essentially love, no matter what horrible thing they've been doing. I've worked with people who've done the most terrible kinds of things in their lives, things that I won't discuss on the telephone, but terrible things. One example might be somebody who's raped his own children. I've worked with this. If I thought that this person were a bad person, that their being was bad rather than that their behavior was bad, I wouldn't be able to help them. So I had to find out that there's a distinction between the being and the behavior so that I could be able to be of assistance. And then secondly, find out from the person who's done this horrible thing, what were they trying to get for themselves through that behavior? Well, when a person steals something, they're trying to get something for themselves that they want. Maybe they want more security. Maybe they want more power. Maybe they want more self-esteem. It's the same thing whether they steal a physical object or whether they steal the innocence of another person by harming them physically or sexually or whatever it might be. People are doing the best they can to get something good, self-esteem, self-love, love itself, a sense of freedom, happiness, peace of mind. This is what people are trying to do. The problem is that they may be doing it in a way that actually prevents it from happening. But if I don't acknowledge the positive intention, I won't be able to help the person change. And that's also true of me personally. If I don't find within myself my own positive intentions, I'll just be in conflict with myself.
Mm.
Self-conflict will not provide me with the result that I want. I want
Wow.
to evolve. I want peace of mind. Beating myself up does not produce that. Loving my intentions and loving my nature, which is innocent, absolutely innocent, allows me to recognize that my behavior may be terrible and may simply not produce what I want, and that what needs to change is not my nature, but my behavior. The problems that people have are problems that have to do with activities being wrong. We can judge very strongly, negatively judge, condemn behavior. But to condemn a being is to miss the point, totally miss the point. Condemning the being does not help to change the behavior of that being. Condemning the behavior, fine, but loving the being is what we need to do. And finding new ways for the person to get what it is they're trying to get is what our job is.
Wow. Well, this is exciting as we have about a minute to wrap up.
Yeah.
I'm just honored because I feel like we've gone so much further in our second visit here to take a quick look at the important principles that people are innately good, and that the behaviors, if they're not producing a result, then it's a failed attempt to meet some need.
Precisely.
And that in a therapeutic process, that it's important to take a look, especially at your center, the Telos Center, TELOSCENTER.com, and to send you an email to get a list of these programs, Robert@TELOSCENTER.com, or just to call you, 714-577-5717, and get this list of things so that a person can actually experience a huge breakthrough in personal change work that is both effective and fast and relatively simple.
Yeah.
Robert, thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Kenneth.
You have a wonderful day, and I know you'll be off traveling the world.
Yes.
And I'll look forward to staying in touch with you.
Well, I am so glad we had a chance to talk, Ken. It was a pleasure on my part as well. And take good care of yourself.
You too. God bless. And to my beloved listeners, you have a wonderful week until we gather again at Advanced Living Radio. God bless, and goodbye for now.
Let go and let God.